Remember when a single income could support a family? In the 1950s, America built history's largest middle class, with workers' earnings doubling alongside economic growth. Today, the economy has doubled again, but typical earnings have stagnated while CEO pay skyrocketed from 20 to over 300 times worker compensation. What happened? The answer lies in understanding that markets aren't natural phenomena, but human constructions shaped by rules that determine winners and losers. These rules aren't neutral or unchanging, they reflect who holds power at any given moment. The endless debate between free markets and government intervention fundamentally misunderstands how capitalism works. Markets cannot exist without government establishing and enforcing property rights, contracts, monopoly limits, bankruptcy procedures, and enforcement mechanisms. Those arguing for less government actually want different government rules, often ones favoring themselves or their patrons. The deregulation of finance wasn't removing government from markets, it was re-regulation with different rules, benefiting Wall Street through mechanisms like the repeal of Glass-Steagall. The real question isn't whether government should be involved in markets, it always is, but whose interests the rules serve and how they distribute power and wealth. Markets don't just happen. They're created through decisions about five essential building blocks that determine winners and losers. Property rights define what can be owned and by whom. Contract rules establish what can be bought and sold. Monopoly regulations determine acceptable market concentration. Bankruptcy procedures allocate losses when debts can't be paid. Enforcement mechanisms decide which rules matter in practice. These building blocks evolve through societal debates and power struggles. Property rights have transformed. While human ownership is prohibited, debates continue over genetic material, algorithms, and water rights. Copyright terms expanded from 14 to 95 years for corporate owners through Disney's lobbying for the Mickey Mouse Protection Act. Contract rules reflect power dynamics. Mandatory arbitration clauses restrict employees and consumers from court access, with discrimination complainants succeeding only 21% in arbitration versus 50-60% in court. Bankruptcy laws allow airlines to void labor contracts while protecting executive benefits and prevent homeowners from renegotiating underwater mortgages, resulting in 5 million Americans losing homes after 2008. These aren't natural economic laws, but political choices reflecting who influences the rulemaking process. As wealth concentrates at the top, political power follows in a self-reinforcing cycle. The wealthy influence legislation, fund campaigns, and shape public discourse while championing free enterprise. Princeton research examining 1,799 policy issues found that the preferences of the average American appear to have only a minuscule, near zero, statistically non-significant impact upon public policy, while lawmakers primarily respond to wealthy individuals and business interests. This power imbalance manifests across sectors. Americans pay 2-3 times more for medications than other countries because Medicare cannot negotiate drug prices, patent terms have been extended, and importation is restricted. Companies like Gilead Sciences charge $84,000 for hepatitis C treatments costing under $1,000 to produce, protected by patent laws their lobbyists helped craft. Cable monopolies deliver some of the highest prices and slowest broadband speeds among advanced nations. While Stockholm created competitive markets through city-owned fiber lines, providing universal coverage at $28 a month, American cable companies have secured laws prohibiting municipal networks in 20 states. Meanwhile, countervailing forces have weakened. Union membership has plummeted as corporations fought organizing efforts, reducing workers' bargaining power and political influence. By 2012, the Koch brothers' political network alone spent more than $400 million, twice the political spending of the 10 largest labor unions combined. Many workers believe they're paid what they're worth, viewing low wages as personal deficiency, while the wealthy see their fortunes as deserved. This overlooks how bargaining power shapes compensation. In the 1950s, when 30% of private sector workers were unionized, blue-collar laborers earned the equivalent of $30 an hour today, not from superior skills, but from collective bargaining. The market undervalues socially beneficial professions. Teaching, nursing, and elder care generate tremendous positive externalities. Good teachers increase students' lifetime earnings by $250,000 per classroom, yet remain among the lowest paid jobs. Conversely, many highly paid professionals engage in zero-sum activities that redistribute rather than create wealth. CEO compensation has exploded from 20 times average worker pay in 1965 to over 300 times today, with executive pay climbing 937% between 1978 and 2013, while typical worker pay rose just 10.2%. This stems from corporate cronyism, where executives influence board appointments and compensation benchmarks. Since the 1990s, stock-based compensation has incentivized CEOs to prioritize share prices through buybacks rather than productive investments, transferring resources from workers to executives. What would you be worth if the rules were written differently? For three decades after World War II, worker compensation rose with productivity, expanding the middle class. This changed in the late 1970s. Productivity continued growing while wages flattened. By 2013, inflation-adjusted median household income fell below 1989 levels. This rupture marked a fundamental shift in corporate philosophy. Pre-1980s corporations balanced stakeholder interests, with executives like Standard Oil's Frank Abrams serving stockholders, employees, customers, and the industrial statesman. Corporate raiders then imposed a new vision, maximizing shareholder returns as the corporation's sole purpose. CEOs quickly embraced this philosophy. Coca-Cola's Roberto Goizueta declared, "We have one job, to generate a fair return for our owners." The easiest path was cutting costs, especially payrolls. Corporate statesmen became corporate butchers, focused on cutting to the bone. Workers absorbed more economic risk as the employment relationship transformed. New Deal policies had previously established employee property rights in jobs through contracts and benefits. After the 1980s takeover wave, this relationship dissolved. Today, even long-term employees face job insecurity, while growing numbers work as part-timers, temporaries, or contractors with unstable incomes. The contrast is stark. 50 years ago, General Motors workers earned $35 per hour in today's dollars with robust benefits. By 2014, America's largest employer was Walmart, paying average hourly wages of $11.22 with minimal benefits. America's challenge is primarily political, not economic. Economic reform requires first changing the power structure controlled by elites. The issue isn't government size, but who benefits from its rules, broadly shared prosperity versus concentrated wealth. Americans must reject two myths, that free markets exist independently from government, and that earnings perfectly reflect intrinsic worth. The real choice is between government responsive to wealthy minorities or to majority needs. A new countervailing power would reform campaign finance, implement small donor matching, eliminate gerrymandered districts, and close government-corporate revolving doors. It would tie corporate tax rates to CEO worker pay ratios, reward companies that share productivity gains, and expand employee ownership. The coming challenge isn't about technology or economics, but democracy itself. Rather than focusing on redistributing wealth after the fact, we should design market rules that generate fairer initial distributions. Citizens have the power to alter these rules, but must understand what's happening, recognize their interests, and organize collectively. Markets aren't forces of nature. They're human creations reflecting our values and power relationships. By reclaiming our democratic voice, we can reshape capitalism to serve the many rather than the few.